Hey, welcome to Your Turn. Mike Causey here. Glad to have you with us today. We're going to have a sort of a government shutdown related show in the fact that our guest, our lone guest, is Steve Bauer. He is executive director of FEA, which stands for Federal Employees Education and Assistance Fund, FEEA, and it is on the Combined Federal Campaign. It's unique in that it's a Feds Helping Feds charity, and you also get, I know, some very generous and constant donations from corporations like such as Blue Cross, and we'll list some of those. But Steve, welcome to the show.
Good morning, Mike.
You were a very busy man 2 years ago during the government shutdown. FEA was making interest-free loans to people, and you ran out of money. There was such interest. Can you tell about that 2013 experience, what you could do for them, how you got the money to them, and how they repaid you?
Absolutely, Mike. It was an incredible time. We spent in a two-month period when the furloughs occurred what we normally spend in a year on emergency assistance loans, and that's why we were literally running out of cash. People do pay them back, but they pay them back over a 10-month period. So once the money's out the door, we don't have it in the bank account. Normally it recycles over a period of time. People were coming to us for all sorts of reasons. So many Americans, not just federal employees, live paycheck to paycheck.
Absolutely.
Paycheck doesn't come, they can't pay their rent. They start incurring late fees. They may not be able to pay their utilities. They may have had something else happen at around the same time, whether it's a death in the family, a sick child, unusual medical expenses, a car that broke down. And that piles on to the fact they're not getting a paycheck and they need help. We would issue checks of up to $1,200 to creditors like the landlord, to the utility company, to make a car payment. We're very careful not to make them out to the employee themselves. We don't want them to spend it frivolously as they might and still get evicted. So we're very careful that way. They sign an agreement and they have the money come out of their paycheck. And of course, when they're on furlough, that money doesn't come out of their paycheck because there is none. So the problem's compounded for us. We're not getting repayments from people that we've made loans to in the previous 12 months. In some cases, people's situations ended up so very desperate that we just made them outright grants, which means they didn't have to pay us back. You know, we have situations, again, where there's a sick child, large medical bills. They've had leave without pay early in the year to care for their child. Now the furlough piles on top of that. And if we had them pay back even a loan with no interest over a 10-month period, they'd be right back in the same situation. So we just make it an outright grant.
Okay, we're talking about the possibility of the next shutdown, the deadline, something like December 11th of this year. And if that happened, if I'm a federal worker, I don't know what day of the week December 11th is, but if I see it, there's going to be trouble. And of course, nobody knows, A, if there's going to be, how long the shutdown is going to last, and when and if people will be paid for that time. In the past, they have been paid, but as a lot of people forget, sometimes it was a month later. So people were going a one pay period, in some cases two pay periods, without any salary money coming in. So if I'm a federal worker and they say, okay, Mike, you don't report tomorrow and you don't report until further notice. What's the process that I do? I have to wait a certain period of time? What kind of documentation do I have to show you?
Well, the first thing that people can do if they're worried about that situation is go to our website, which is feea.org. And right on the homepage, there is a big button that says Get Help Now. That will take employees to our emergency assistance application, and it lists the documentation that they will need so they can prepare. Mm-hmm. That's very important.
Good
because
idea.
If they get laid off, mm-hmm. if they are told to stay home, they may not have access to some of the documentation they need. For example, we ask for their last two pay stubs. We ask for an SF-50, Notice of Personnel Action, that shows they're a federal employee, how long they've been a federal employee, who they work for. So they can get those things set up ahead of time. When a furlough does occur, we will put special instructions up on our website to explain to people the process. But one of the important things is we will not accept applications, even though people can download them and get them ready, until they have actually not received a paycheck. I mean, there's been no harm, no foul,
okay.
If you will.
Okay. So
if they're sent home for 2 days and then they come back and Congress says you're going to get paid, they've never missed anything.
Okay. I see.
But as soon as they don't get a paycheck, and depending on timing and agency, It might be that first Friday that they don't get it, or it might be even 2 weeks later before they actually do not get paid, depending on how long the furlough lasts. And there's a lot of scenarios, as you know. They may be called back after 10 days, but their paycheck's going to be delayed a week.
Yeah.
And that may be enough where people do need assistance.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And the vast majority do pay you back within a 10-month period?
That is correct. We do not take any collateral. It's an unsecured loan. It's on good faith. Federal employees are proud people, and they pay their debts. So as a general rule, we get back at least 95 cents on every dollar that people do pay us back. So we're good with that. But again, cash flow becomes a problem. Yeah. If we have to distribute $500,000 in a week where we normally do $25,000, that money's not coming in until they're off furlough and their paychecks resume.
Do you recall how much you gave out in loans and grants during the last shutdown?
It was about $750,000.
Okay.
And that came over about a 10-week period. Not everybody knew about us. They found out about us. They may have borrowed elsewhere and you know, robbed Peter to pay Paul and actually did not need help until a month later.
Yeah.
So, and we also, of course, sir, have to gear up. We have volunteers come in to process them. The processing time goes up from where normally we process an application like that within 48 hours. It may take as long as a week, unfortunately, when we're getting 10 times the number of applications that we normally get in a day coming through the door.
Okay. Now, the corporate sponsors always intrigue me. I've been with you at different conferences, the Federal Employed Women, the FDR conference, one of my favorites. But I've seen you work the booth. You have prizes and things to make people aware of FEA and raffles and all that kind of thing. And the corporate people always come through. I know most of them give to you on a regular basis, but sometimes I've seen them write big buck checks there on the spot at a particular event. Who are these corporate sponsors?
Well, our oldest and biggest is the Blue Cross and Blue Shield Federal Employee Program. They take care of federal employees through their health insurance program. I've had it myself for 30 years, but they feel they have an obligation to give back to the federal workforce because the federal workforce supports them. They give us at a minimum $100,000 every year, and frequently much more than that. If furloughs were to occur in December, I know I can count on them to give us a boost. It may be $30,000, it may be $50,000. It's the very end of their calendar year. They love to contribute to help federal employees.
Yeah,
they really feel they're giving back.
All of these places, this is not an ad, this is not a commercial, this is a fact. So who are some of the others? GEICO.
GEICO, again, a lot of the listeners don't know that that stands for Government Employee Insurance Company.
Yep.
Their name used to be that, and then GEICO was the acronym. Now GEICO is the name, and they insure more than federal employees. But they were founded by civilian federal employees. They still have a federal sector, and they give discounts to many federal employees for their insurance. And they have been giving year after year through the GEICO Philanthropic Foundation, and they often give at other times
I've seen them. How about other sponsors? So you got Blue Cross, you got GEICO.
Right. They're our oldest and strongest. Mm-hmm. A newer one who's become very important to us is Long-Term Care Partners. They've been running the federal long-term care insurance program now for, I think, 14 years.
Mm-hmm.
And they are, again, thinking we should give back to the federal workforce. They support us. Their contributions have increased over each of the last 5 years, and they're getting close to rivaling GEICO as a corporate sponsor. So they have been phenomenal and are very involved in the workforce and go to all the same conferences we do and contribute prizes and funds as need be. But they have been fantastic to us.
We have to take a very short break here. I'm talking with Steve Bauer from the Federal Employees Education Assistance Fund, and we'll be right back here on federalnewsradio.com. Hey, welcome back to Your Turn. I'm talking with Steve Bauer, Executive Director of FEA, and some fascinating stories about feds helping feds. The emphasis on furloughs or shutdowns, but you guys go 24/7, 365 days of the year. What kind of situations are you presented with, you know, on a weekly or daily basis? I mean, I know people give, and we'll come to that, but when they need money for whatever reason, how does that work?
We describe the process for furloughs, and it's very similar for what I call individual emergencies. Mm-hmm. We have had people in the last few days who've had a fire in their home.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, a lot of renters do not get rental insurance, which is relatively cheap, but people don't think of it. So they've lost everything. They need help. They have to find a new place to live. They have to replace their clothing. They have to replace their furniture. So we get those kind of situations. We get I'd call it more mundane. You're in a car accident with an uninsured driver.
Mm-hmm.
You have suddenly a $1,500 repair bill on your car. You have to have your car to get to work. And if you repair your car, you can't pay your rent. So we can do that kind of thing. I mentioned leave without pay, which can occur for a lot of different reasons. When you run out of leave because of a sick child, because you're ill yourself with a chronic illness, you may have a short paycheck and need help. So we help those kind of folks day after day. We have a lot of, unfortunately, the breakup of a family.
Mm-hmm.
Spouse runs off and empties out the bank account.
Yeah.
And suddenly you can't keep a roof over your head. So we help in those kind of situations.
Now, just recently, we've had major flooding, particularly in the South. The Hurricane Joaquin didn't hit us, but we were braced for it here in the D.C. area, but it went out to sea. But I know they said, I think Columbia, South Carolina had the most rain it's ever had. Charleston, tremendous flooding. And though South Carolina is a very Fed-heavy state, there's a lot of military, a lot of federal workers there. Have you been hearing from them yet?
We're just starting to. You know, when you're evacuated by boat from your home, which is flooded, your concern at that moment is where am I going to sleep tonight?
Yeah.
And then getting back to your home eventually, and this is our experience with natural disasters, and we help folks all the time after natural disasters, federal employees. It takes a week. Usually, or thereabout, where people begin to recognize, okay, my life's going to return to normal, but I still have all these bills to pay. And on top of that, I have all these things to pay for that were created by the flood. And it could be home repairs. It could be a hotel that you had to stay in for a week. It can be replacing all the food that you lost in your refrigerator. The list goes on and on and on and on. So it's usually about a week or two after a disaster like this that we start hearing from folks. There's a lot of retirees down there as well federal employees. So we're anticipating a heavy workload based on that.
You know, unless you're a survivalist, unless you read these books like 30 Seconds After and whatnot, which I do, by the way, but you're not aware, or unless you've been through a situation, it's hard to imagine when the world just stops. You know, if you have a flood, for example, and after Mount St. Helens in that area, ATMs don't work. Electricity doesn't. Nothing works, and you're just there until you're gotten out or you're rescued. And then where do you go? How do you move it? I think most people have a tough time with that. Maybe if you live in Florida, on the east or west coast, you understand it to some degree. But you were talking about the situation in South Carolina and Charleston, and you're expecting a rash of requests from people coming in who've been flooded out. And as you say, their first concern is where are they going to sleep that night, and not with the fishes, hopefully. But then at some point, life resumes. And I have dined out on stories about you back in the day. A disaster. I think there was one in Florida. I believe it was a hurricane. And obviously, it's your story to tell, but where you got on a plane with a lot of money, cash, and heading south to Florida with drug country.
It was our first big disaster that I was involved with, and it was Hurricane Andrew in 1992.
Bad one.
Yeah. A very bad one. The winds were so high that it really broke the measurement systems. They got to 150, and then they really didn't know. Yes, it even damaged the building in which the National Hurricane Center was in. But it hit South Miami,
Homestead
particularly, and Homestead at that time had a very active Air Force base.
Yeah.
A lot of civilians on it. Knowing what we do, they called and said, "We need you down here. Our folks need help." And indeed, there were no electricity. There wasn't going to be electricity for weeks.
Yeah.
People had to purchase things like water.
Yep.
And they were scalping water, those that had it. And cash was the only commodity. There were two banks in Homestead, or two branches of Homestead Savings and Loan. They were both literally gone. I mean, they were wiped out. I flew over them. They were completely gone. So they said, we need you down here. We need cash. So I took out, at that time was a lot of money in 1992, $20,000 in $50 and $100 bills, put them in an envelope, stuffed them in the inside of my jacket pocket, and tried to get through security in Denver to fly to Miami. And they said, you have to take your jacket off. And I said, I'm not taking my jacket off. I'm not letting that happen. So we had a little bit of a fight there. Finally, a supervisor took me into a special room, explained it to him, showed him the cash, and said, it's not leaving my body. They let me through. Got to Miami, and back then, it wasn't really a war on terrorism. It was a war on drugs that we were fighting. And in fact, Homestead Air Force Base had a drug interdiction unit with Black Hawk helicopters that would fly out looking for boats smuggling drugs in. Indeed, when I landed in Miami, and picture me, a very nervous white guy, keep patting his jacket. Carrying $20,000 in unmarked $50 and $100 bills. Got off the plane, and I was picked up by what was then the U.S. Customs Service. The good news was it was on purpose. They were the ones flying the Black Hawk helicopters. They put me on a Black Hawk helicopter, flew me down to Homestead. The roads were impassable. It was the only way to get down there. They put me up on a trailer that people could come to from the area and went through that $20,000 in cash very quickly. People needed things, as I said, like water, but some needed generators, for example, because they had medical equipment. People would have died without it. So it was a phenomenal experience to be able to do that. We've had Katrina since, where we helped 4,000 federal employees, many other big disasters, and a number of little disasters. We've had tornadoes in Oklahoma City many times, Tornado Alley. It's funny because I looked the other day, and almost 20% of the people that we, and we do grants in this case, not no interest loans. Right. We give them the money. About 19% of the 9,000 plus federal employees that we've helped with grants because of natural disasters have gotten more than one grant because people rebuild in the same place. It might be in Florida where they have hurricane after hurricane. It might be in Oklahoma City where we've had homes destroyed more than once. So we're always there for people when they need it. And in our 29 years, and next year we'll be celebrating our 30th anniversary as a charity, we've done about $4.5 million in grants, and we've done almost $7 million in emergency assistance loans. So our total is well over $11 million, and we've helped over 16,000 federal employees. It kind of reminds you that federal employees are typical Americans.
Yeah.
I mean, they're not the fat cats who are lazy and get paid exorbitant amounts and don't have to pay for benefits that people picture them as.
Well, I think, again, it's hard for most of us, maybe if you've been a reporter, maybe if you've been a cop or an EMT, but it's hard for us to comprehend the magnitude of these things. And Jerry Shaw of Shaw Brantford, his father lived in the Mount St. Helens area. And, of course, we had the explosion, the volcano exploded. The area was impacted for months. And, you know, we heard about it. It was caused some problems here, the dust and all that sort of thing. But then life went on. But Jerry, at a party, one time walked up to me and he handed me something. And it looked like a piece of a handkerchief that had been cut off, and so because it was just hanging limp. And he handed it to me. And it was a check that I believe someone had written to his father, Robert Shaw, for $100. And on the back of it, it had been endorsed probably 20 times and worn almost to pulp. And it was script. They were using that for money because the ATMs wouldn't work. They couldn't get money. Gasoline station pumping machines wouldn't pump because of that fine pumice and volcanic dust that got in it. But it's not like it happens and it's a three-day event. This can go on for, in that case, many months.
Absolutely. It's incredible that the situations that people are thrown into that we would never think about if we haven't lived through it. You know, I always go there, but the grace of God, I've never had that situation for my family. And it's almost unimaginable what you go through at a time like that. We have stories from people that, you know, were rescued by boat from the third story of their house after Katrina. Lost everything, got relocated by their agency, wanted to move back, and starting from scratch with their home, all the permitting. I mean, we've read about all these things. Here we are so many years later, and people are still having trouble rebuilding in the Ninth Ward, for example.
Well, that's an interesting point, because I've talked to first responders, and I have friends who've covered these things. I have not. But they say, give me a good old fire any day, because if you assume no loss of life, a fire is clean, it's all gone, and you start over again. If you have flooding, like you did in Katrina, that the damages from that, from mold to structural problems, can literally last years. It's been, 10 years? And they're still rebuilding.
They're still rebuilding, absolutely. And right, the other thing is, with fires versus floods, insurance.
Yeah.
You get into all sorts of arguments, whether or not you had flood insurance. Was it the wind that caused the waters to flood your house, or was it just the flood? And they go on and on. And so many people did not get what I think they thought they deserved from their insurance company. So that's another problem that you're faced with after floods.
Well, one of the things that I know about you that fascinates me is the role FEA had as an institution, that people who give to FEA through corporate grants or payroll deduction or through the combined federal campaign, but what you all have done in Oklahoma City with the children who were survivors, who had a parent or in some cases two parents killed in the bombing of the Murrow Building in Oklahoma City. That was 20 years ago?
20 years ago, we commemorated that anniversary on April 19th of this year.
And the absolutely fascinating thing is the kids that FEA, with you as, I guess, the godfather, have put through college. And there was one child who was not born at the time, but a parent died. Obviously the father, I guess. And this child was born afterward, and he or she is about to enter college.
Just entered college, as a matter of fact, because it's been 20 years now. Uh-huh. So the child was born 3 months after the bombing.
Wow.
Yes. We had 168 deaths in the Alfred P. Murrah Building. I was there the next day, set up at First Christian Church with the Salvation Army and the United Way. There was the three of us there to help people with whatever they needed, flying relatives in, paying for funerals. We had volunteers from Federal Managers Association doing some of the things that we don't think about. Yes, we were paying bills, but in some cases, we were literally writing the checks for the people because
they couldn't
even write a check. But other things that probably meant more than anything to them, mowing their lawn.
Yep.
Because
I can see it.
All the relatives were coming to town,
and
Dad just died, and he always mowed the lawn on Saturday.
Yeah.
So whatever the folks needed, we took care of that, and that was our emergency assistance program. We got a lot of contributions. People were very giving for that bombing, and we were one of the few charities that was actually helping. It was our clientele, if you will, civilian federal employees. So people were actually contributed more than we were giving away or granting, if you will, in those 10 days after the bombing. So we decided we would set up a scholarship fund, because we haven't talked about that, but that's the other big thing that FEA does is scholarships. We have an annual scholarship program for federal employees and their families. And in fact, we've given now about $13.5 million in scholarships. So it's nothing to poo-poo, if you will.
Yeah.
We do a lot in that area. We very much believe in education, thinking that federal employees are the great middle class, which means they're too rich to get financial aid, but too poor to send their kids to college.
Yeah. Let me take a short break here on federalnewsradio.com, 1500 AM. We'll be right back. Okay, back talking with Steve Bauer. He's executive director of FEA, the Federal Employees Education and Assistance Fund. See, we were talking about Oklahoma City and some of the things that people don't think about. That's been 20 years. You said 168 people died in that bombing. How many children went to college as a result of FEA and the people who give money to FEA?
Right. Well, in a moment of idiocy or foolishness, we decided to set up a scholarship fund for the children who lost a federal employee parent in that bombing, not realizing at the time that we were talking 200 children. And what we agreed to do was literally to put them through college, full ride, any school they could get into, tuition, fees, books, housing, food, everything they needed. And here we are 20 years later. We have, I believe, 5 kids in school this year. And we are almost done with the program. We've put about 195 through college. We contacted many of them on the 20th anniversary. They're phenomenal. They're doing great. And I'm always impressed by the professions they have chosen. You know, with a full ride, mm-hmm. you're thinking, oh, we're going to be an MBA. We're going to do that. They are special ed teachers.
Yep.
They are physical therapists. They are nurses. They're in what I call helping professions. And I think that's very much a reflection of the public service commitment of their families. Their parents were public servants. They appreciate what we are doing for them. And they want to give back now. And that really warms my heart.
Well, I think you told me one time, too, and this makes perfect sense in that context, is that while they could have gone anywhere, if you can get into Oxford, you're going to Oxford. If you can get into Yale, you're going to Yale. But so many of them stayed close to home, not because they're simple, fearful Oklahoma kids, but they stayed home to be in the community and I guess with surviving parents and siblings.
Exactly, exactly. A great support group, having family, the surviving family around. I would say a vast majority of those 195 kids went to Oklahoma State Schools, which made the program a lot more affordable for us, but it enabled them to have the support of their families. I mean, we had kids that tried college, dropped out, went into the service, came back, throw a little PTSD on top of the trauma of the bombing and losing a parent, and they needed psychological counseling. But many of them have made it and eventually went through college. We would continue their benefits so they could get that degree.
To get any group of 200 young people and to find that 195 of them made it through college, went to and made it through college with some couple to go, that's incredible. You couldn't pick that even in some very affluent areas.
Absolutely. And it tells you a little bit about, again, the federal employee, they are, you know, people don't think about it, but they're so much better educated as a workforce than the general population. I think the expectation often is you will go to college. And in many cases, the children were thinking, I've got to honor my lost parent by doing that. And they were very determined to go and get through college.
Okay. We talked about the giving aspect of FIA, which is the purpose of it. But I saw a statistic somewhere that the contributions to the combined federal campaign are down over the last 6 years. They're down a variety of reasons, pay freezes, recession, maybe anger, who knows. How's FIA doing?
We're hanging in, but our CFC contributions have gone down. Mm-hmm. And the combined federal campaign obviously is probably means more to us than any other of the 20,000 charities in the combined federal campaign. But you can think about what we do. We're feds helping feds.
Yeah.
And this is a way that feds can give to help their fellow federal employees. Unfortunately, because of the reasons you cited, participation is down. People are giving less. The total has gone down considerably. And we did not have a very good year last year. We are trying to gear up, get everybody to give again this year in the combined federal campaign, recognizing again, furloughs are a possibility.
When is the combined federal campaign?
It kicks off officially September 15th.
Okay.
But there are still about 150 separate combined federal campaigns, and they have a little discretion there. So Denver has a campaign, Sacramento has a campaign, Chicago has a campaign, and in the larger cities like D.C., while they may kick off the campaign, it doesn't mean the IRS has kicked off their campaign in D.C. So the period that runs is basically September 15th to December 15th.
And what's your number on the combined federal?
Our number has stayed the same and will remain so, 11185. If people put that down as the pledge number, I can assure them that money will find its way to FIA. And it's bread and butter to us. There's some great things about the CFC. You can give by payroll deductions. That's the best way to give.
Yeah.
When I ask somebody for a contribution, when we're out at conferences, they may say, here's $25, okay, or here's my credit card, do $50. You do $5 a pay period, that's $130 you've just given. So people tend to give higher gifts. What's equally important about it is I get a report and I know how much we'll be getting over the next year, because that's when the money is coming out of their paycheck. So I can count on I will get a $25,000 check from the CFC in the middle of September, okay? That's not true with other giving. I mean, GEICO can decide we're not going to give next year, okay? But CFC money is locked in.
We ought to put you in charge of the federal budget, because they don't know what they're going to get from day to day.
Yeah, if we could only get them to pass appropriation bills, right?
Well, I know you've had some, and I don't want to bit interesting, like we're looking at the wildlife or something, but you've had some interesting experiences going to these disasters. Now, you talked about Hurricane Andrew and Homestead Air Force Base, and I remember that, and I knew some people that were down there that were just wiped out. But you've been a number of places where, I mean, it just strikes me, you said ICE, the customs people picked you up, but you've been picked up by Forest Service or the Postal Service. And again, people don't realize, particularly when you go back in the day, when people still got checks rather than direct deposit. Somebody from Social Security rides around with somebody from the IRS or somebody from Customs or somebody from the Forest Service and says, here's your check. Here's your Social Security check.
I've been there where, indeed, postal employees in the old little jeeps, the open jeeps, would ride around with a Social Security employee who had people's checks, because direct deposit was not a big thing back then, trying to deliver in trailer parks that had been wiped out or to, you know, streets that were almost impassable, where they would write the number of the house on the roof so people could see it, trying to find people, get the money to them. And it's incredible what federal employees do. You know, they're into public service. It's not necessarily their job what they're doing, but their neighbors need help. Back to Hurricane Andrew, there were federal employees who had lost their homes, who were worried about their families, who had had two cars destroyed. They were there trying to get generators to people that needed them to keep their health.
I know a half dozen people who took, I guess they took vacation from their federal agency to go down to New Orleans and the Gulf Coast area to help after Katrina.
They took
their kids.
Yeah, people think of just New Orleans, but I went along the coast of Mississippi. There were some terribly hard-hit places, and other Gustav hit not very far away from the date of Katrina. So there were hurricanes as well, and it was absolutely incredible. Yes, people needed all sorts of help down there, and I hadn't mentioned, you know, after Katrina, a lot of people were relocated for their job or they needed a place to stay and their family was elsewhere. When we helped 4,000 people, we sent checks to 38 different states around the country because, as we know, a lot of the population of New Orleans, about half of it moved out, and not all of them have even moved back to this state.
Yeah, a lot of them went to Houston, I know.
Houston,
Baton Rouge.
Absolutely. But they were Philadelphia, they were Kansas City, you know, those that had a federal employment and the agency had a need, or in some cases, you know, the USDA Finance Center is down there that does payroll for a lot of places.
And the Thrift Savings Plan.
Yes, and they needed to continue to operate. So they had other facilities around the country. Their people had a report there.
I need to take a short break here. I'm talking with Steve Bauer from FEIA. We'll be right back here on federalnewsradio.com, 1500 AM. Hey, welcome back to Your Turn. Talking with Steve Bauer. He's Executive Director of FEIA, the Federal Employees Education and Assistance Fund. And Steve, I've been making notes here of the stuff that you have done individually and the things that people who give to FEIA from individuals and corporate sponsors. And it's just absolutely incredible.
When I think about it, and we've helped now between the scholarship and the emergency assistance program, over 26,000 federal employees. That's a lot of people, and they all have unique stories. They were all very deserving of that help. Just heard the other day, the way things come around sometimes, one of the firefighters in the Northwest who died fighting the fires was a former scholarship recipient of ours. Goes into a helping profession.
Yeah.
It's absolutely amazing. But we've had a lot of employees, low-level employees, who got scholarships from us to continue their own education and are now in very responsible positions in government. So it's all absolutely incredible. It makes us feel good, and we want to keep doing it, and we want to do more. And to do that, people have to contribute, whether it's CFC or direct donations from our online site.
Yeah, well, you've seen, I know, an awful lot of bad stuff and had some trauma, but it's got to be very rewarding to go to work every day.
Yeah, nothing better than to be able to help people. I had a very wonderful federal career helping people, much of it with the Social Security Administration. Again, people that had lost a loved one, widows who needed benefits, disabled folks, and now I've been able to continue to do that through the Federal Employee Education Assistance Fund.
So if people want to either ask for a loan or a grant for whatever reason, or if they want to, better yet, give money to you, they can go to your homepage, and you said there was a button they could click.
There's a button for Get Help Now.
Okay.
And there's a button for Give Now.
Okay.
And they gotta even up in the long run.
Yeah.
We can only help to the extent that people give.
Yeah, okay. And you know, we're facing the potential of another deadline. The president has said he's not gonna sign another continuing resolution, so he's drawn a red line in the bureaucratic sand. John Boehner has already resigned, so he can't do it again to forestall this. So while, you know, we in the media oftentimes hype things and cover it like at a sporting event, a shutdown in December is a distinct possibility.
And it means 1.5 million Americans have an unsure future. They may go to work but not know when they're going to get a paycheck, or they may not be able to go to work and don't know if they're going to get a paycheck at all. It is incredible that we do this to the workforce.
And it's a little late to start saving up 6 months.
Every study that's been done, and there are many, many, many of them, show that something like 5% or less of the population of America
are prepared,
has that kind of funds, even 2 months.
Yeah.
So people just, they're not savers.
Mm-hmm. I love hearing the financial experts argue over whether it's 6 months, 9 months, or a year, but there's this figure out there, and it's just totally unrealistic for the average person who's, you know, paying the bills and buying a house and putting kids in through any level of school.
Absolutely. Just meeting your current obligations is tough for many, many people. Our expectations are very high. I mean, you can't have a kid in school and not have internet.
Yeah.
All these add-ons to what we consider normal expenses, things that you need, rent, food, utilities, it's very expensive to just keep up.
If things go smoothly, right?
Absolutely. And so many things can go wrong.
Yeah. What about the administrative fees for FIA? How does that work?
We are one of the lowest, and 25% is kind of considered to be normal. I was just at the 150th anniversary celebration dinner for the Salvation Army.
Oh, yeah.
They are an outstanding outfit that's been around for 150 years. Their administrative expenses are 25%.
Mm-hmm.
We are way below that, depending on, and that's a function of how much you raise in a year.
Yeah.
Our actual fundraising expenses don't change much, but the percentage is the percentage of what you raised. Since we didn't raise as much last year as we have in previous years, our percentage went up a little bit. But we've been as low as 6%. We've never been over 15%. Right now, we're running 8 to 12%. So
that's amazing.
We have a lot of volunteers. That's one of the reasons.
I just had a flashback when I was a young reporter for the Washington Post. The worst thing that could happen to you was to be made key man, which meant you had to be the United Givers Fund person. A, it meant your career was on the skid, and B, you were expendable. But getting money out of newspaper reporters, particularly in those days, you know, they were tough, they were cynical, they were World War II veterans and you know, been there, done that guys, and they'd always question you and demand to know things like the administrative fees and all this sort of thing. And of course, I made it up, but they consistently gave to the Salvation Army, which I found very interesting, and it was the one charity at that time that they trusted.
Right. One thing nice about the combined federal campaign, when you give that way, and if you go to the brochure, which is available online at your agency, it lists the overhead percentage for every charity in there. That is a requirement. We have to submit our audit, our tax return. They have some pretty high standards in the combined federal campaign. At one time, they had the 25% limit, but that was knocked out by the courts. So there may be charities in there that have a 60% overhead. That are eligible to be in the CFC, but you don't have to give to them. And if nobody gives to them, they get no money. That's the other thing people don't know about the CFC. If they give to 11185 FIA, we will get that money.
Could I split my contributions? Could I give half to you and half to the Salvation Army?
You can split as many as 10 ways.
Okay.
And in some of the, and again, there's 180 CFCs. Some will let you split 20 ways. So you absolutely can. You don't have to do it on percentage. You can give $50 here, $100 there, $250 there. Like I said, it's a great way of giving. I was a federal employee for many years. I started with a dollar a pay period, 26. Yep. When I retired, it was $40 a pay period, which was over $1,000.
Yeah.
I said, oh, I got to replace that by giving. And I went, gulp.
Yeah.
I mean, I got to write a check for $1,000.
Yeah, yeah.
That's why giving through payroll deductions is such an easier way to give.
Yeah. Steve Bauer, thank you so much for telling us about FIA. Hope people remember your DESI. Is it 111818?
11185.
Very good. All right. Thanks. Have a good week. We'll see you here next Wednesday at 10 a.m.
Thank you.